Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. This time he's in studio. It has become a repetition because we're doing it on a daily basis, right? That even when you're not here, I start finding myself making you part of my introduction.
What do you mean, Helmut?
Which makes me sound like a politician.
What do you mean?
Making promises.
Hey man, you know politicians are part of life, you know.
Oh yeah, you know.
We can't.
Well, we are all politicians to some degree, you know.
Yeah, we all politic somewhere.
Yep. Man, you look so beautiful in that dress.
Hey, that's
really?
not politicking, Helmut.
It's politics. Well, you know. Well, can I take you out? What's a princess like you? Which princess? Come on, man. See, listen. But look, the thing is, as much as we like to say, I like someone who is honest. No, I've come to learn that human beings don't do well with honesty. That's a very easy way to get punched in the teeth. Can you imagine borrowing money by telling someone, can I have $500 that I will never pay you back?
That you will never pay back?
No one is giving you that money. You got to promise like your life depends on it. Because sometimes it is.
And then just
tomorrow, my brother, speaking of money.
And then you anyway hand it over.
I ran into very nice scammers on my way here from Checkers. I'm saying nice because if they were not nice, they would have beaten me.
Was it today?
Oh yeah, it was today.
Because I didn't see them from the Checkers here.
Oh yeah, just from the taxi rank.
Yeah.
Yeah, they must have disappeared because I really laughed because I think those guys are on internship because I ran into them. What?
What? No. There's an internship for scammers.
No, they must be.
Okay.
It's either those guys are terrible at, or they must be some type of internship.
Or they were training.
Yeah, they're trained. Just two of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them approaches me first. I thought he was just, trying to ask for directions or something.
Mm.
Yeah, and he's going, this pointing to his homie that, doesn't speak English.
Mm.
And he needs someone to translate for him. Now, first of all, that's the oldest trick. And then that story somehow switches to this guy that is looking for a translator is also looking for Maria. And I want a translator so that I can give this guy his money. And then he pulls out a stack of cash from his pocket. Now, in my head, I'm like, okay, so hang on a second.
Are you going to give me the money?
Yeah. I was like, hang on a second. You two are working together, but you need a translator. That's when I concluded, nah, these guys are on internship. So, boy, did I start laughing.
they need a translator. And they were working together the whole time.
They were working together the whole time. Look,
that's still the worst part of that scam, is that they still walk together and they tell each other, you know what? I'm going to get you your money. And the other guy goes, yes, yes, yes. I want my money. Let's go tell it to someone else.
Look, the story is just half cooked, man. Yeah, so, I just laughed it away and just walked out. I'm like, okay, guys, better luck next time. That story is just not going to cut it. But, I'm pretty sure they will improve. There's someone they will practice on and get an A+.
So, I hope not. Yeah. I hope not, Helmut, that they find someone.
I really hope not.
I really hope not. I hope they fail perpetually until they get real jobs.
Uh-huh. If someone is going to grade them at the end of the day, then those guys are getting U+.
Well, that I hope for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, same here. So, It's December, a lot of activities, and some of activities are both morally and legally questionable.
Mm.
Yeah, but speaking of activities, welcome to Home Run, and we are here until the hour of six, as always, and again with one exciting topic. And today, let's talk about this continent's beloved topic, and that is the natural resources, you know, economic independence, and you know, stuff like that. In the early days of 2025, when Trump came to office and started changing American domestic and foreign policies left, right, and center, one of those things that is still was felt both politically and economically the world over is the cutting of aid.
Mm.
That's when a lot of us basically came to realize just how much U.S. taxpayers have been pouring outside their country. Like, that's a lot of money. Which now you can call Trump any type of name under the sun, but on that one, I'm low key on his side. Because look, if I'm a nation's leader and I come to office and find out, and find out that there are a lot of internal projects that are struggling with funding, but we are pouring millions and billions of dollars outside, I'm just like, okay, how about we just channel that money internally?
Mm.
And then, well, those countries that have been using that, they'll have to figure something out.
Or they start collecting their own taxes.
They will have to come up with their own, revenue collection mechanisms. That's not being jealous or being political. That's just being reasonable.
Or even being stingy.
That's not being stingy either. That's being reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, whether or not the money that was channeled from, that was cut from all these, aid organizations was channeled into internal U.S. America's internal development programs or not, that's their own problem.
Mm.
Yeah, so, but a lot of people are basically divided on that. I remember we were here talking about it, and I like how mostly mainstream media liked to, turned around and more like painted it in a way like Trump is a bad guy for making that decision. I'm like, look, he's not an angel, but on that is one of those more very reasonable decisions. It's not rocket science. Now, so there's one gentleman now who, one of the very, very honest Africans, I have to admit, decided to remind us.
He's an honest African.
He's an honest African. You don't meet a lot of those in the political sphere. Yeah.
Let's see how honest he is.
I almost gave,
If he's like Mo Ibrahim that likes complaining about Africa while sitting in London.
African leaders running for office. That's my favorite part from Mo Ibrahim. Running for office at the age of, 90.
Mm.
Yeah. And I swear he just goes on to say that, are you guys crazy or what? I'm like, uh-oh. That's not very diplomatic. I mean, very comic, but not very diplomatic.
Mm.
So, one gentleman by the name of Maxwell Gomera, UNDP resident representative and director of African Sustainable Financing Hub of the same organization, points out that Africa doesn't need aid. It needs control over its critical minerals. Now, the word control itself is a very crude one for me, because when you say control, what's that mean? Now, the thing is, I totally understand I totally understand the approach, because what you are looking at here is you have something that's on the market, you have something that's that's on demand.
Yeah.
Like the extractive resources, aka the minerals, are on demand largely because of the because of two main reasons. One, technology is booming. Two, you are looking at energy transition. That means the demand for green energy and green modes of transport and green source of energy. It's all popping up left, right, and center, and you have all the raw material that's required, basically, for you to run this. So, if you can turn that into traded commodity, you can make a lot of money out of it. Except, one of the most, one angle that's most, easily, mostly criticized about how we handle the whole natural resource discussion is that, Yes, we are making money from exporting it raw. But the main discussion now, which is now gaining momentum, and also in the areas of what is that Institute of Security Study calls it summit diplomacy, where we are just hosting summits and talking and then getting finalizing with declarations, and then we meet then the following year and do the same thing all over again. So,
and then we just get stuck on the same issues.
Exactly.
With over and over. The same over. Points not being met. And then we go have, like, our finance minister goes and asks, so, did you guys really spend the development budget? Madam Minister, only 30% so far.
Now, one of the reasons why I'm actually, I actually totally understand one Mr. Maxwell's point of view when it comes to African development and source of revenue in terms of developing Africa, like getting money for Africa from its resources, is because you can see the demand, you can see the interest that a lot of global powers like China, Europe, and China, Europe, and the U.S. are all basically zoning on in sort of trying to create, more like renewed relationships in terms of Western powers. And because, with the West, we started off on a wrong foot. But with China, it has always been about diplomacy. Mm. Let's just sit and talk about this. But, we started off on the wrong foot, a lot of very touchy subjects with when it comes to Western relations. So the fact that even as we speak, if I'm not mistaken, you have two African leaders that are in the U.S. that have just yesterday they signed call it a peace agreement, which I still don't understand though, because first of all you have a peace agreement that's been formalized, because this has been going on for a while and we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Now you have two countries that are signing peace agreements in Washington.
With each other.
Now, you have East African Community. You have SADC. And then you have African Union.
Mm.
All these organizations, for some reason, could not pull it off.
Alone.
None of this organization could actually get these two gentlemen in one room.
It's a compelling argument, Amr.
Yeah, it is.
Up and until
you read the comments on
a Qatari session last year.
Yeah, that.
Was it last year or this year?
It was this year.
This year, yeah. After the failed Luanda situation in December last year. Yeah.
Yeah, so the thing is, it's very enticing, when you look at it from the fact that, DRC, for example, DRC is very natural resources rich. Now, this is the resources that a lot of industries in a lot of developed countries need to basically, run a lot of their products and also build a lot of their products, everything from electronics, transport, you name it. Yeah. They need this, there is a market for these extractive resources. There is a market for it. The thing is, this market is acquiring it unprocessed. And we want to kick it up a notch where we are processing it, which is a very enticing idea. Like every African, I want to see us processing our resources, but let's also just take a few steps back and be honest with ourselves here. Let's start with investment. One thing that I talked about earlier this week was, African Union branch that focuses on the, on child safety. It's a very long abbreviation. AREW something. Now these guys met in Lesotho. I think their discussion is ending today or tomorrow. They met in Lesotho to basically, tackle, problems that are, that that are mostly common in Africa, especially with regards to children, like child soldiers, you know, child marriages and child labor. And one lady from Cameroon did point out that Africa, they're, especially in her country, there are a lot of programs that are running, that are tailored towards combating things like child labor, child marriage, and all these things.
Yeah.
Guess one which organization kept coming up with regards to with regards to the funding of this the funding of these initiatives? GIZ. If you can't fund social programs, how do you want to fund an oil refinery?
Here's the thing. The oil is not even being pumped yet, and we're talking about oil refineries. Doch, man.
No, even if it's not an oil refinery. And also, by the way, one thing about oil refineries, one thing that I also learned about oil refinery when, recently from the US Venezuela tension.
Yeah.
I think northern parts of Venezuela, there's a specific crude oil that Venezuela has. So the refineries that some of the refineries that are found in the U.S., I think, those ones are mostly, I think, must directly or indirectly belong to companies like Chevron.
Mm.
They were built specifically to refine that specific oil.
Mm.
It turns out you can't just take any oil and shove it into any refinery. A refinery is built to refine a specific type of oil.
Yeah.
So, even with this, with all this tension, oil is still flowing, albeit the quantity has been, have been reduced, flowing from Venezuela because if the tension escalates into a full-blown military confrontation and that oil stops flowing, that means those refineries close shop.
That is true.
So, that means what you're looking at is, if you want to process, everything that you want to process, especially oil, uranium, whatever it is that you want to process into finished products, you have to fund the infrastructure.
Mm.
Now, that brings me back to my question of child protection initiatives. If we can't fund those, just how on earth do we want to fund multi-billion dollar piece of infrastructure like an oil refinery?
Look, it can be done, Helmut.
It can be done, except we keep buying Vurupas instead of funding the project.
It can be done. Okay, I'm now sorry, Helmut, even though I gave you a heads up before we stepped in, that I'm going to use these examples.
Please do.
okay, so dear listeners, if you thought, where did I go to? Did Helmut probably kick me off, on the face of the earth and hid me in a cupboard somewhere?
Mm.
No, I was not hidden anywhere. I went for a five or six day excursion to China.
Fact finding mission.
And this was based upon understanding what rural development really materialized like. One of the best examples is a two-year turnaround for a very small village of a couple of hundred people. Now, you were asking the question in terms of, Helmut, what should be done to achieve the political promises that are made on the ground, meaning the realities, achieving the particular realities.
Yeah.
The moving, the shaking, the alignments, the adjustments that we got to see, because it was not just me, it was me and four other Namibians that were on this particular fact-finding mission, and particular, sort of like exposure discussion to, what development has looked like. We got a major wake-up call specifically in terms of how you see things happen. One of the key things has been understanding, what do you do specifically to certain parts of a country or certain parts of a continent? And you realize that other parts, as opposed to these particular parts, let's say, are becoming richer and wealthier and are achieving their particular goals, whether it be SDG or local national developmental goals. And they are just, these guys are just particularly performing every time, you know, everything just looks good where it's going. And the not so good performing parts are literally stuck. They're stuck in some sort of a time loop that just keeps them there. Now, one of the things that was laid out to us very clearly in one of the engagements was from a professor that was invited in this province that we visited, the Jiangxi province, which is also touted, Helmut, as the province that is the foundational province to China's particular, you know, communist revolution, because that is the province specifically that achieved, you know, the major adoption of the singular Chinese identity that we see today. Now, if the small statement I made a little bit earlier, just in the same sentence, of you seeing a whole bunch of parts in an area achieving prosperity, they are hitting their SDG markers, they are hitting their national developmental goals,
yeah,
and other parts which are just stuck and standing still, or actually they are regressing, meaning moving backwards.
Yeah.
There's a clear indicator from the African Development Bank Group as to why you see certain things. And this is something that was explained to us also there in China. So the province we visited, as I mentioned earlier, is the province of Jiangxi. The Jiangxi provincial government was realizing that all its neighboring province buddies in the national setup of China were becoming wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. Whereas they saw themselves as being stuck in a certain place. Now, we are clearly seeing this even in an African example.
Mm.
SADC is moving ahead with its own development plans, with its own infrastructure, with its own infrastructure, projects. And then you hear of these guys here in Central and West Africa staying stuck still in their own right. Now, I'm not saying everyone is staying stuck there, because you can see some good examples potentially. Nigeria wants to achieve something, and then obviously they get poked in the eye by Trump by being accused. Yeah, you still allow kidnappings to take place of your Christian populations. And then Tinubu stood up and said, no, that is not true. And then literally just the next week, those kidnappings happened.
Yeah.
And then you see other bright sparks also happening, and you see some positives, and then you see like 10 negatives. But when you come to the SADC zone of things, we've got a few sort of like questionable areas. Mozambique, with its northern part of its country still being a question mark.
Yeah.
And then there's DRC, which, like you said, just before we stepped into the studio, Helmut, it does not seem that both sides want to own up to the prospects that they were literally responsible for the conflict that took place in Eastern DRC. For example, Rwanda, failing to acknowledge that it is literally the backers of M23. And like you and I discussed earlier this year, so too the DRC army or the DRC government, not really, even though in that first peace treaty, the one of a couple months back, the one that they signed with Marco Rubio in the office. Even then, when Rubio pointed out, we know that you guys, meaning he pointed to the Rwandan guys, we know that you guys are behind M23, and he pointed to the DRC guys, and he said, and we know you guys are behind the other,
basically have like a mini proxy wars going on there.
Basically. But even though the proxies of the DRC army, was literally being supported literally on the front lines by the DRC army and the DRC police. So you see certain particular things where even the nations don't directly declare war on each other. They would rather fight it out between, you know, two puppets on the ground, which makes things a bit dumb, because it blurs the lines for your citizens on the ground. For example, Ahmed, a basic strategy for that Eastern DRC situation would have been if the DRC army and the DRC police showed up as a united front and said, we are here to defend our sovereign territory.
Yeah.
What was the first thing that you and I literally exposed in that discussion was that the DRC army was using a paramilitary group that they were giving weapons to to literally sort of like harass the Tutsi population of North and South Kivu. The guys that literally come from, that also come from
Rwanda
itself, which obviously gave, the local population was known as the Banyamulenge.
Yeah.
But it literally highlighted there that there was an issue. Ad break, guys.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And if you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, USA.
So, the particular points that we showed out there was that even the biggest thing that the DRC government lost was they lost a lot of trust from their own population in eastern DRC.
Yeah.
Because they were using proxies to literally try and harass and persecute and sort of like treat a group that is part of the DRC identity. And they were making these people feel unwelcome, the specific group. So the best thing was that the whole state apparatus of DRC was against one group. And this particular group went and said, okay, bruh, if this is the way you want to fight, you know what? An eye for an eye. And thus you sit with a calamity on your hand. Did you and I count 30 years or did we count 20 years since 1994?
Since
1998.
It's a little over 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for 20 plus years, they were sitting with a calamity on that eastern border. And in between, obviously Rwanda, you know, was silently sort of like arming the M23 guys. Now, what does this show any listener out there? All they see is a highly incendiary situation based upon racial tensions, or should I say ethnic tensions, because there's only one human race. There is no such thing as multiple human races. There's only one human race.
Yeah.
So it was ethnic tensions. These ethnic tensions were bloody. They were ugly. Remember the example that you used of the youths, the outlaw youths that were executed by the police.
Kaluna or something Kaluna, the name of the, you know, the gangs that were just causing chaos.
Yeah. And most of them guys were juveniles. They were between 15 to 19 year old young men.
Yeah.
Juveniles. They should have been sent to a juvenile prison, meaning a prison for adolescents, for teenagers. But no. The crimes they committed, because they've been exposed to so much violence during their growth as young men and as children, was that to them it seemed like the only way to do business and the only way to have a way of life was through fear, through violence, and through having an intimidation and obviously being in possession of weapons, for specifically firearms. So firstly, you see this other ugly side of Eastern DRC, which does not look stable. Now, we get into a picture of, okay, now elevate that to a government level, making it a macro level situation. You elevate it to a government level picture, And you even have the confusing signals and language and communication coming out of Kinshasa of like, Kinshasa thought that Kenya was there. Kenya and the other Eastern, East African, community members were there to fight on their behalf. But why would Kenya do that?
Okay.
Because Kenya told them explicitly, we're here to run a peacekeeping mission. We are here to fight on behalf of you.
Now, if you look up, if you just go on most of the videos of the, what are they calling this, Washington Accords that's being signed by DRC and Rwanda, which the fact that that's not happening under the watchful or more like under the supervision of either SADC. I mean, I totally understand why it would be impossible for SADC because Rwanda is not a member of SADC.
Mm.
But the East African community, both DRC and Rwanda are members of the East African community.
Yeah.
Both of them are members of the African Union. But I'm looking at both these organizations and you are seeing that, they are not solving their own problems. Like diplomatic wise, we can't solve our own problem. That's the most embarrassing picture that this whole thing draws.
Yeah.
And then if you look at basically a lot of the videos that I came across of this whole Washington Accords between Rwanda and DRC, one of the biggest questions that that's being asked is that if this war is between two rebel groups, where are the representatives of the rebel groups?
Of the two.
Where is the representative of M23? Because if Rwanda has never actually acknowledged the backing up M23,
that they are the fighters,
yeah, but they're signing a peace deal, like
why,
with who? Okay, now if you are as far from the, if they both are as far from the rebel groups that have been clashing militarily on the in Eastern DRC this whole time. If both governments have nothing to do with this rebel group, the rebel groups, then that peace agreement is just useless.
Mm.
Because these guys will just keep fighting.
No, they won't keep fighting, Helmut. Do you know what's the worst part of them signing these agreements?
Yeah.
Since May. May was May or June when Rubio had the both foreign ministers there for the first peace treaty.
Yeah.
Since then, they both acknowledged that it was them. It's an acknowledgement.
Exactly. Them being there is that.
They admitted that they are both the belligerents in this discussion. They acknowledge that they are the belligerents.
Yeah.
Now, getting back full circle to our aid discussion where you started from.
Yeah.
So, the aid discussion. Obviously, what we heard through the USAID nightmare that took place a little bit earlier this year.
That was a nightmare.
And there were some people here in Namibia that were trying to connect dots that didn't exist, even though the people that they asked were not people that were in any way even direct beneficiaries. Why do I say that? And with what confidence can I make that statement? Specifically because there was literally a website that showed what Namibia got USAID for. Namibia only got US aid either through targeted institutions or civil society organizations that were told you are only sticking to HIV AIDS awareness creation programs,
yeah,
and interventions, and Ministry of Health for HIV AIDS interventions and programs. Klar! There is no rocket science behind that statement that I'm making, because it was a lovely internet resource that showed this, and no further sort of like exaggeration can take place from it. For example, you'd have to really go very far to try and prove that when the US said you are only using for HIV AIDS awareness creation programs and intervention programs, and suddenly the money is deviated to a, let's call it, let's say an LGBTQ plus program, you really have to go very far to prove that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Americans were literally running a tight ship in terms of the accounting and the accounting transparency.
That's actually how NGOs work. Or more like donors. That's how donors work.
That is how the donors work. But
donors want every receipt.
But I've heard nightmare stories also in Namibia. Yeah. besides the one nightmare you told me.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the one about the local
Sounds
artists?
Sounds of Namha, yeah.
Where the local artists were coming and then doing cover songs
playing celebrity and then Beyonce.
You know? There have been nightmare stories like in Namibia where the account people forget what accounting principles are. Now, here's the thing. When we get into the discussion of what aid is supposed to do, and you get into the discussion of what you want to achieve. This excursion to China literally showed a discussion of why can't your own institutions and your own governments and your own local authorities step in as the aid representatives?
I think that raises one very question that sounds somewhat comical. Name one country that have achieved, first world in terms of development, first world in terms of development economic status. Just from aid.
No one.
Yeah.
Isn't
that like what we just want to do? We just, please don't cut the aid because we need it this and this and this. Now, the question is for how long now? How long are you going to be spoon fed?
Do you know what's the worst part, Helmut, of the question I asked, in terms of trying to see how many research documents or reports I can get that asks the question, how many African countries has a revenue base from tax? Because the question that, sometimes when you Google search things, it turns your question into something else that it can find. For example, revenue-based financing. That was the term I kept bouncing into. It's known as RBF. So what is revenue-based financing? Revenue-based financing has been a discussion that, that English professor that I've also been watching for a long time, and he always flips the questions or the discussion on a different angle. You enter the same discussion just from a different perspective or from a different angle. For example, he asks the question, almost like in the European and the North American prospects or political discussions, they've got these things of left and right political spectrums. So the left and right political spectrums are now sort of like dominating the major political discourse in these countries.
Yeah.
Here in Namibia, you will see some similarities. Because it's a mixture of both that you see in many of our political parties. With not much many of them actually understanding what their true goal is. Now.
You have no idea how many people I see, how many people that are very close to me, as in some of them are friends.
Yeah.
And I see flags of political parties on their status every day.
Yeah.
I asked them, who is the Minister of Finance?
Who are you asking?
Hang on a second. You have a flag flying on your status, but you don't know who the Minister of Finance is. Like, that love, that religious love for politics is just...
Yeah, it's what do they call it? It's almost like, what's that word they love using in journalism? It's topical. And you go like, it's topical? Really? So, it's like following trends.
That's what it has become.
I almost used a different explainer, but right, it's the one with flies. But I stopped. So, when
it's December, man.
Yeah, it's December. It's the end of the year. So when we look at this discussion, the Institute for Security Studies for Africa and the Mo Ibrahim and the African Development Bank Group, the African Development Bank Group mentioned the statement in their 2024 Africa Economic Outlook last year.
Yeah.
Mo Ibrahim mentions it in 1 July early this year in also for report format that they generated.
Yeah.
And the ISS, mentions this a little just after July, but in November last month about this particular statistic. That 75% of African countries can achieve revenue-based financing, meaning they can finance their projects from the taxation that they collect. You know, that's the revenue. They at a rate, the best rate is at 75%, which is a pretty good statement. And all three of them say, that all African countries have a template or frameworks for collecting taxes locally in their countries. But Remember the first part, the first thing that I mentioned about stability and having stable political realms?
Yep.
And less corrupt governments? That's one side. The second scenario was that many of these guys, and we'll quickly step into the ad break.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's five-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Welcome back. It's 16 past the hour of 5. And if you just tuned in, this is our home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
So, when we sit there looking at this particular picture, Helmut, so what I mentioned was obviously 75% of the African governments, or the African governments can achieve a financing rate of them for themselves of 75%.
Yeah.
Namibia was on that list. We were in the top 10 African countries of the ISS. The downside was that Namibia actually was the closest data they have of us was at 2022. And according to NAMRA's particular performance statistics, as outlined by the various, by the two finance ministers we've had so far, which is obviously current Minister Shafuda and previous Minister Shimi, that NAMRA has actually been doing a pretty good job in terms of
revenue collection.
Revenue collection. Now, let's halt that bus just there on the revenue collection.
Yeah.
What has been pointed out by all three resources that I went through is that most African governments have weak abilities to enforce literally their own legislation to say, you must pay your taxes. You have to collect your particular, let's call it rates from the taxpayer base that you've got. Or you should clamp down on corruption in various particular aspects so as to ensure that all monies actually mean or are translated for a good reason in your economy.
Yeah.
Now, remember I mentioned that British professor once again, Richard Murphy, wonderful guy. Helmut, he explains economics in a different realm that does not confuse me or makes me read in any other particular direction. Because he explains one particular thing very good. The only way we can do away with aid or being dependent upon aid is if our governments stand up and our governments realize that they are the only people. No. Not the word people. They are the only institutions. Governments are the only institutions who are responsible for money. It's not a private business. It's not the household on the ground based upon the economics, philosophies that I've been exposed to and that many people have been exposed to. Because we're always being told about micro and macro. Mm-hmm. Micro represents the household level. Macro represents the larger sort of like
scale commercial level.
You know, not just commercial, let's say between private and public machinations that participate in the economy, because you need the public one to build the road for you, to build the power, the power distribution center and all those particular things. And you need the private one that comes and installs functions and services and businesses on those infrastructure aspects.
Yeah.
And then the household is supposed to be the lowest level of consumption that you can measure. But the household thing has been distorted for a pretty large while. Why? Because Namibia's largest household is characterized through a single parent, usually a woman, who's looking after more than three kids. So our household characteristic is slightly warped. You and I also saw that in our, in the population, the census. What was the thing's name? The labor force, report and the census report, in that scenario. Cause the census report came out last year and the labor force report this year. So we saw that distortion taking place there. Plus we also saw that the households were becoming more, but they were becoming smaller.
Shrinking in size, yeah.
Yeah. So you sit with such weird anomalies. And these are not averages, guys, because I've also learned something from averages, that in some cases they take an average, Hamoud, and they say, okay, the average indicates that this is the most reoccurring characteristic. Meaning, let's say, if the discussion was based upon, for you to achieve something, you need to spend $30 all at once, or $100 million all at once. But let's say there's a guy that does $10, he spends $10 here to buy one part of the thing, another $10 next month, another $10 next month, another $10 after that, and this guy can literally then sort of like get to the same level of whatever particular consumption that the $30 has been benchmarked at, but this person actually spends more or spends less, but still achieves the same goal or the same result. It was based upon investment equals productivity or heightened productivity. If companies realize this now, private companies realize that they need to buy the latest, let's say, computers and invest in the latest hardware for them to be able to do for their workers or employees to do or meet the targets and tasks and do their jobs as often as possible at the best level as possible.
Yeah.
So, okay, sorry for digressing, guys, and for leading you all to Witvlei for a brief moment. But when you come back to the discussion of, okay, so a government is the only entity that's responsible for the Namibian dollar in Namibia. It's not any of the commercial banks. It's not even the Bank of Namibia. It's the government of the Republic of Namibia. They are the only entity that can print money. They are the only entity that can own the money. And they are literally the reason the money exists. So, if you realize, Helmut, that you are the, let's say the government, let's say you are the government for now. Mm. You, Helmut, you are now going to be role-playing as the Namibian government. If you realize you are that entity, Helmut.
Oh, well, I'm a little too broke for that, but sure, go on.
But you sit with all this power, Helmut.
Yeah.
And for some reason, you are being told, yeah, you must not have much debt, but you're the only one that can create and manage and distribute this money. Even though it is based upon a symbiotic relationship with the private sector that has to build and install their operations in the Namibian economy to help also make that money move, you remember? Because they need to buy equipment, they need to pay for salaries, they do this, they do that, and thus the money circulates faster, quicker, and more efficiently. But now we sit with an issue, Helmut. Okay, so if we know that Namra is outperforming itself there, year on year, we know that the Namibian government is responsible for the strength of the Namibian dollar, meaning its policies dictate the performance of the Namibian dollar.
Yeah.
Then why are we looking at a discussion of having aid play a significant role in our own projects? Now, and that's the major question I'm always left with.
That's the major question. No, you're not the only one that has that question. Last year, a video of Kenya's National Treasury and Economic Planning Cabinet Secretary John Badi went viral when he came back to the annual IMF and World Bank meetings. And during Kenya's one of their national holidays, he was addressing the public when he said that I'm not saying we were treated bad at these meetings. I just felt embarrassed sitting in the queue and waiting for us to be called one by one. Nigeria, and then you get in there for like 20-30 minutes, and next to Kenya, You walk in there, and then he concludes by pointing out that.
And the worst case is, they pull up a PowerPoint presentation about your country's performance.
I know. They are not calling you by name. They are not saying Dwight. If you are representing us, they're just going Namibia next. Yeah. Now, the thing is, then he goes on to point out that, look, some of these programs that we are funding using some of this, some of this borrowed money.
Mm.
Because, some of this borrowed money, we can actually generate this revenue.
Yeah.
We can generate this revenue from home. We can fund these projects ourselves.
Yeah.
Which again, you can just actually see a little bit of progress. I emphasis on the word little bit of progress with Ethiopia's Renaissance Dam, even though it's Ethiopia's Renaissance Dam and Tanzania's John Makovuli Bridge.
Mm.
Because they're basically two infrastructures that I know of on the African continent that were inaugurated this year.
Mm.
And both governments emphasized on the fact that, these projects were domestically funded.
Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. Now,
but how often can they replicate this?
Exactly. You know what's my favorite part?
Mm.
Kenya, Ethiopia is going to generate electricity from that bridge. So, they put a lot of local funding into a mega project that will generate more revenue for the country. Now, I'm not saying a bridge is a bad idea, but how are you making money from a bridge? I'm just saying in comparison to Ethiopia, the Tanzanians went a little south on that.
Look.
But still, congratulations on the mega infrastructure.
No, you have to ask the question, Amut. What was there before this bridge got there?
Yeah.
Was it potentially a bridge that got, because remember Tanzania and Mozambique are literally like Namibia's north and Angola and DRC. Yeah. When I found out, Helmut, literally just a month and a half in that direction ago, that the reason why Namibia's north floods every year because of the rainfall that supposedly falls in Angola, but that is only part of the fact. The actual fact is that the rain actually falls in the DRC, there's a lot, because the DRC is literally on the equator.
It's a rainforest, yeah.
It's literally on the equator. So it's literally from the DRC downwards that rain falls.
And then Angola has a lot of rivers.
And that water literally flows into Angola and Zambia. And if you look at Zambia, and if you're now thinking, now why is Zambia not acting like a buffer zone? Well, Zambia is like this thin on the map. Zambia is literally this thin on the map. And Zambia has that weird shape to it.
There's this, southern DRC tail that literally gets into Zambia.
Yeah. And then it gets here into that little thing that we are bordering onto as Namibia, that big fat part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Angola. And Angola just doesn't absorb any of that water. It just flows all the way into the north of Namibia. Now, to anyone, if this was a situation happening in Europe, it is a nightmare to infrastructure for the Europeans in that scenario.
Yeah.
If it was happening in North America, in the US or in Mexico or in Canada, it would be deemed a continuous natural disaster of natural disasters. Because this is surface water. This is not even water in the rivers. This is surface water on the ground, just running into your territory. Now, when I made that remark, remember I said, like, continuously when we look at that particular water, mm-hmm. we could have built canal systems that could have boosted the agricultural prospects of people, specifically in the northern regions. Why? The canal systems would be able to literally just make that water flow a little bit better through Namibia.
Yeah.
Meaning there's a way for you to literally redirect the water instead of it just being lost water. Because remember, that water flows in Helmut, and then it just lies there in some parts of the north. As opposed to, you could have just allowed the water to literally then be flowed, channeled, held up in certain catchment dams, which I've seen in the north. Kudos to those guys, those particular communities.
Correct.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right. Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintage Original, or Vintage Lemon. Anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
And welcome back.
So I was still making the reference.
Yeah.
So we could have captured a lot of that water, Hamut. Kudos to the people.
It was properly channeled in some kind of catchment area.
Yeah. Kudos to all the people in the north that have already, you know, sort of like dug up their own catchment dams, or, you know, local earth catchment dams. Good on you guys. For example, like they're at Odibo. You know, wonderful examples. But the rest of the north obviously is still prone to this particular, develop this particular aspect. When we zone in on Namibia's particular scenario, it makes things also difficult, Helmut, because you've got to also understand the clear definition in terms of what is urban, what is rural, which resources do you allocate to who in such particular scenarios, and how do these resources, these infrastructure, get developed with the adequate resources. Now remember, this then makes us fall, with that statement I made, this makes us fall within the rural development realm of things. And with rural development, you and I, we've continuously pointed out, we need to understand clearly that there are certain towns in Namibia that are going to become magnets to Namibia's industrial policy. Meaning they're going to have heightened rural to urban migrations, as well as also that these particular urban settlements will have to play a pivotal role in each of the respective regions of Namibia to dispense services to the rural communities.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to once again use a China example. This past week, just because the Chinese President Xi Jinping showed up in 2021, 2022, just question mark on the time frame there, because obviously we were dealing with language barriers. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not knocking anyone, just stating the facts so as to explain. The Chinese President at that village said literally, no one will be left behind. He even participated. There's a little delicacy they make from rice, from cooked rice.
Mm.
So, you know, like freshly boiled, cooked rice. Mm. They throw it in that thing that, you know, that the ladies pound mango in, but make it a little bit bigger. And imagine instead of having two, you know, like two sticks, you have literally like two hammer-like wooden items. It looks like two hammers.
Mm.
Reason being, I never knew that rice could literally become like putty clay. You know, like the clay that kids get at school? To make, you know, figurines and stuff with?
Yeah.
That play clay?
Mm.
I never knew that the rice, when you pound it so, you know, so often.
In its powder form?
It doesn't become powder. It becomes like a sticky adhesive thing. It literally becomes like a glue.
Rice can do that?
Yes! So, I participated in that activity, by the way. I had to show, you know, the local Vandukoma strength there. All the way in Jiangxi. Like, hey guys, I could not let our flag be flown very low. You know, I had to keep it up there. Okay, I was also the only guy on the trip.
Thank you for representing.
I was also the only man there. But yeah, so I had to represent, you know, pounding away. But in a span of 2 years, Helmut, that village looked like you would find most villages in Namibia. No, very little access to like, electricity or decent services. They didn't have a proper tarred road leading to the village from a main supply road network. They had just a two-track gravel road. They had unsafe structures. The villagers were living in unsafe houses and unsafe structures. And obviously remember that in China specifically, the discussion on like deed, you know, land deeds, like actually owning the land.
Like a title deed. Yeah.
It doesn't actually exist because all the land exists. All the land in China belongs to the government.
Yeah.
All land. It's just you get given like, it's like a permission situation. You know, like the, what's that thing that Minister of Agriculture has, the land lease program?
The 99 years one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something similar to that. But here's what that regional government did after the Chinese president was there, just after COVID, like 2021, 2022. They came in, they assessed what needs to be done, and they asked the local community, what do you want to achieve? Because that local community had a level of a GDP per capita of 3,000 yuan per person. They could only grow food for themselves, and the other main economic activity was making chopsticks from bamboo, from the local bamboo forests in the vicinity.
Yeah.
Chopsticks, a set of 200 chopsticks, guys, would sell for 3 yuan, which is literally almost like 5 Namibian dollars. Imagine that. Something made by hand and literally being sold for almost nothing. That local government's job, Helmut, the only job they had was to upgrade infrastructure, bring services to the people, ensure that there is a targeted plan to increase the, let's just call it like the convenience factor. Well, now, when I say convenience factor, it's things like road, telecommunications ability, you know, the ability to pick up, like also being able to call and stuff like that. And the ability to have like electricity and running water. Basic things. What that local government also did, there's a lovely walkway that was constructed for this community. Just to give a more pedestrian friendlier look to any visitors coming there. The local community was then able to expand its agricultural offering, meaning diversify it. They were able to
incorporate. On a subsistence level?
No, they went from subsistence and commercial level.
Okay.
Because now they could have targeted tourism activities. So going from 3,000 yuan per capita, literally now you're at a couple of 100,000 yuan per capita. In 2 years! Not in 10, not in 15, not having a vision of 2030 and we are at 9th in the year 2000. No. In 2 years, it was just said, you, the local government, achieve these goals, make sure these people's livelihoods are increased and improved and that they've got access to things and services.
How do you do that?
How you do it is the literal explanation that I gave you about Richard Murphy.
Yeah.
When you realize that you as the government, you are in charge of the money, you're in charge of the security of the money and the value of your money, and you're in charge of ensuring that the money circulates in your country. So what do? You move assets to achieve your goals. So what are these assets, Helmut? These assets are, for example, telling the regional government to say, hey, listen, this is our strategy under NDP6. We want to see industrialization. You better put up a program or a budget program or whatever to say, okay, We realize in order to achieve industrialization here, this is what our local authorities in these vicinities lack or need access to. So, what happens? Yes, if you are Ochu in the Kunene region, Ochu, you need X amount of resources to achieve a certain level. Korejas the same. Opuo the same. Try to get people living in the towns so that you can have more services, meaning spend money to ensure that you attract that revenue, that you develop a revenue collection base for Namara, because you will collect revenue later on. Then you make sure that you have revenue collection mechanisms in place, for example, like a running software system that actually has proper accounting mechanisms so as to avoid any corrupt practices. There's a specific town I'm talking about and it's sitting right at the front of my head. And I'm going to mention names right now. That there is adequate service provision. Because Helmut, I'll ask you the question today in 2025 now.
Yeah.
How do you have pay? Why is my flashlight going on? Oh no, it's behind us. Why do you have prepaid electricity? Nah. And NamPower still switches off the town, the electricity supply to the town. How does that help happen? How do you prepay for something and the town still gets disconnected for bad accounting practices? Because bad
So you're not disconnected for not paying.
No.
The
town is being disconnected for not paying. Now that is a bad accounting practice.
Uh-huh.
Because like, remember what I explained to you. There's always three people in an accounting equation. There's a debtor, someone that borrows, that owes you money.
Mm-hmm.
There's you in the middle, and there's a creditor, someone you owe money to.
Yeah.
Now imagine the scenario. You're a homeowner. You have prepaid electricity at your house. You buy your units, and then you go read in a newspaper, or you find yourself one day that there is no electricity supply, but you remember I bought units yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Just to hear on a social media post that the town was disconnected or the local authority was disconnected.
So it's not your fault as an end consumer.
As a consumer, yeah. So how is it possible that if you have a fail-safe mechanism that ensures that what you buy, what you use is what you bought, and that you can actually afford what you use, that there is someone in the supply chain or in the value chain or whatever chain who's not being honest? For example, the local authority. I'll give you another story. Just before I left that Friday night, when I had leave that week, my sister, because my sister is on the Rehoboth community page, the Facebook page. My sister always tells me the jokes that happens there. And it's like community stuff, man. It's like serious stuff. And it was this particular example of what happened. The one guy went and said, how is it that I pay water and electricity and I still get disconnected? And then they go and mention the administrative guy who accepts the payments at the cashier, mentions his name. Yeah, it's that one's name there. And then that guy responds back in the thread going like, it's not true. The system was off. Our IT people don't know what they're doing. And then just for the IT guy to respond below his response to say, yeah. Nope. That system has been running thoroughly. I can prove and I can swear by. So literally it's a complete comedy show happening in real life in such a scenario. Now, when we sit with such images, with such scenarios in Namibia, where we are trying to play or stick to what NDP6 wants to achieve, but somewhere there is something not happening. And this is as micro as you can go, because a local authority is there to be the revenue generator or collector for the national government.
Yeah.
And this local authority is not doing its job, Helmut. Imagine paying for services that are not being dispensed to you. But before that, I think we've got an ad break, no?
Yeah, we have one coming up.
How many seconds, Helmut?
Yeah, but before that, we have 7 seconds. I don't even want to start a sentence. Because you're not going to finish it.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste. that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's five-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana konongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back to Home Run with Hemd and Dwight on Eagle FM. If you just tuned in, we are just here with the trying to understand why are we highly dependent on getting money from somewhere else for our own well development programs. And now, to be fair, during this midterm expenditure framework,
yeah.
Did I get it right? Yeah,
yeah.
I always fumble that one. One thing we saw in that one, the one that we, for this year, the one that we went through was that Namibia is doing great when it comes to, funding our own projects ourselves. We're in somewhere between 70-80%.
Yeah.
Compared to last year, that was eye-watering.
There's nothing we can do.
Look, I know.
But it was a good thing. Even
I think growth is what we, you know, is what is not happening. Look, we can't pointing to, you know, we can't keep pointing to, okay, how do I put this? Just how long are we going to keep pointing to colonialism as the reason why we are not developing? Because we can only do that for so long.
Yeah, and it can, and that theme will only hold up for so long.
Exactly.
Except for the inequality thing.
No. That one is not going away that one is not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me just, read for you something that I found, somewhat interesting on this, on the, Africa doesn't need aid. It needs control over its critical mineral resources from Maxwell Gomera. Now, the solution to this whole aid problems, according to the gentleman, is not complicated. And then he makes very interesting statement. A very interesting statement. Though it is challenging, no surprises there. But then that's not the challenging. That's not the interesting part. The interesting part is that he goes on to point that we need to build processing facilities, not just extraction sites. I'm like, okay, just hang on a second. We don't even run this. How much of these extraction sites did we even build?
Is this still on the minerals?
First of all, when it comes to the extractive industry, first of all, most of the facilities are privately owned.
Yes.
And most of them are foreign owned.
Yes.
And
then you get to ask the next question. Where is the resource sold? That's a question, Hamoud, that I had to flip on its side to understand. Why is the resource put on a ship, on a train, and on a truck, driven to a coastline, to a harbor, and then sails to the northern hemisphere?
The answer is simple. You don't even own the extraction industry.
No. You would not even need to own it. Just think about it.
Yeah.
It's the same principle, for example, like with oil. It's obviously what was the downfall of, unfortunately, of a guy like Mossadegh, which is potentially also going to be the same
Venezuela
situation. Mm-hmm. Look at the discussion of where the market is. Where do you need to sell the thing? Now remember, Venezuela is part of OPEC.
Yeah.
Russia is part of OPEC. Syria was part of OPEC. Libya was part of OPEC.
Yeah.
Who was the other Middle Eastern country? Iraq was part of OPEC. No, Iraq was not.
Thank you for bringing up Iraq. I have one interesting story for you coming out of Iraq.
I think Iraq was not. But Iran is also part of OPEC. Now, when you look at that OPEC discussion, they literally were a collection of oil-producing countries who were determining oil prices.
Yeah.
So it's a market. They came together and said, let us determine our own natural resource and its particular economic price setting, price setting mechanisms, so as to be sure that you don't have weirdos who are speculating with our oil when the oil is halfway on the boat, is on the boat halfway through the ocean on the Atlantic to its destination market.
Venture capitalists are savage when it comes to that.
Dude, there were ugly things that happened in 2008, 2009. The boat is in the middle of the sea.
Someone is already betting on it.
And the thing has jumped from $50 to $150 a barrel. And people are like, what's going on here? Just to find out, it's a bunch of speculators. It's a bunch of traders sitting in the Northern Hemisphere financial market zones who are making prices. And they didn't even see the thing. They didn't even see the thing to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's literally why OPEC exists.
Okay. Just the first sentence.
Just the first sentence.
Mm, you're welcome.
And then, obviously, Helmut, obviously, you know, inviting just American companies to come and participate.
Yep.
So,
do you have the money or not?
That's
all I care about.
The first particular thing you've got to look at is, where are you selling the resource? Now, Namibians sometimes, you know, from the comments I've heard, they get unhappy when they realize, okay, so like in our uranium sector, uranium, which is a metal, goes directly to China. But because the Chinese company that mines the resource is selling it to itself.
Yeah.
Just think about that, guys. They're selling it to themselves. They are going to go use it themselves. It's the same thing with Rosatom and the other former Soviet countries around Russia.
Mm.
Minus Ukraine and minus Lithuania, Latvia and Estonia. Mm. You've got Belarus, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan. Who's the other one that I forgot? Well, anyway, there might be a stand there somewhere. there might be a stand there somewhere. What those guys went and did, Helmut, was that because Russia had stockpiled so much uranium.
Yeah.
Russia is literally helping all these other countries achieve one of potentially the most reliable energy sources in the world.
Nuclear,
which is one of the reasons why they're also approaching us as Namibia. Because
you want some of this?
You guys want some of this?
Like that's where industrialization starts. Start with energy.
Start with energy.
Yeah.
And if you have accessible energy, you can just roll from there.
I mean, look at our energy price and ask yourself, if you're an investor, could you set up an energy-consuming industry in Namibia? Are you kidding me? It's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
The first thing, Hamut, with our energy prices that needs to be sorted out is that somewhere the ECB or NamPower needs to do an energy affordability survey. They need to go onto the household level, and they need to go and interview Namibians that work. You remember that 500,000 Namibians that work in the economy survey?
Yeah.
They need to go to those Namibians and ask them, can you afford the electricity at your place where you stay? Can you afford electricity? Because now I am being shown a top-down equation. So it's what electricity, what infrastructure, what wherever, who's wherever, what. But all I'm seeing is just things that are on a macro level. Things that were installed there. And this is how it informs the price that you see here in front. Yeah, but did you do an affordability survey?
All they just have to do is round up Nampower employees and they'll start seeing tears from there.
To do what?
Of the cost of electricity. They have houses, remember?
Yeah, but those guys are not Hamut.
Huh?
Those guys are rolling in the dough, bruh. Those guys are the Namwater guys. They get paid ridiculous amounts of money.
Not all of them.
All of them?
Really?
Yes!
Don't make me go looking for a security guard job at Nampower. But look.
Even then, you'd even be rolling in the dough.
From a security guard?
Yes!
I need friends at Nampower. Now
I don't even know why they need electricity as security guards to begin with.
To guard our electricity?
Ah, oh, come on.
Someone will steal it with a bar, or, you know, with a power bank. But look.
But the copper cables are being stolen in the Kavango regions in the O regions.
Copper cables are on demand.
So, where is the security actually? Is it at the head office of Nampower? Literally in the regions.
You can't guard the entire power line.
By the way things are going, it seems like they have a great need there. So yeah, Hamut, you could potentially open up a security company,
because
to guard the whole infrastructure.
That's a lot of manpower.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of manpower.
It's a lot of money.
You're focusing on the bright side.
You just need to be motivated by the dineros. It's a lot of money. Just think about it.
But your price though.
It's a lot of money.
Be like,
And you don't even need to buy them, you know, Land Cruiser packages. Buy them an e-bike, you know, show how environmentally friendly.
You bike that thing and run.
Anyone listening to me would say right now, Dwight, you're the worst employer ever.
That thing will run out of power in the middle of nowhere.
I would tell them, hey guys, listen, man, this is a way for you to keep safe and be healthy at the same time. Imagine chasing, you know, chasing the copper cable thieves with unreliable electricity.
Well, on the bright side, you are chasing them quietly.
Well, in between, potentially, you know, there might also be a few leopards and, you know, other VR Super 16 double overhead cam champions out there.
Reverse parking experts.
You know?
The solution is to build processing plants.
Yeah.
But if you just look at the extractive industry on the African continent, starting from building processing plants as a discussion of Africa's development, especially if we want to use, which we already were heavily leaning towards using the extraction industry as a main source of revenue for anything development. It's important to ask yourself, if you want to build a processing plant in Namibia, who owns the mine?
Right there.
Because if you...
Okay, you're still at the processing plant.
Yeah.
You jumped a phase.
Which phase?
Remember I said, where does it get sold?
Yeah, where does it get sold? Because if you are going to process it, do you have a market for it?
No, that's still jumping the phase, Hamad. Remember, that thing gets taken out raw as it is. Gets washed off a little bit by a smelter. Smelted a little bit,
just
heated up.
Just a few sprays in. They do the same with coal so that it doesn't catch fire during transport.
And throws it back into that same particular cargo mode of transport to be shipped off to the harbor. Ne? It gets to the harbor. It gets on a boat. Where does that boat go? That boat goes to the place where the market is. So what does it mean we as Africans have to do in terms of the aid discussion? So where does aid usually get deployed in? Aid gets deployed in the health sector, in the education sector, and in some other smaller fragments of your national infrastructure development program. But does it actually translate to telling Namibians or other Africans, hey, listen, why don't you, as Helmut, you start a business that is a smelter, and you, Dwight, you start a business as, as a manufacturer of screws. Mm-hmm. And then there's Party C, who's literally mining the iron ore. The iron ore person then comes to a central market point and tells Dwight, hey, Dwight, this is the iron ore quality that I can sell to you. But Helmut is there to literally smelt it, and refine it slightly for you to get it into the state that you wish to have it. And then a transaction takes form from there. Do you know what this whole AI bubble thing has been showing me the whole time, Howard?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you don't know where is there a government even present. NVIDIA donates money to OpenAI. OpenAI uses that same money to buy chips. NVIDIA chips from NVIDIA. Come on. Tell me that's not the easiest way to start a market.
That's turning a water cycle into a money cycle, because if you're donating money and then that money is used to buy your chips that to power the AI that you also will keep investing into. Wow. Okay.
Look, it's not the best example. It's an example. Because the significant thing would be you've got to sell something somewhere.
Dwight, it's the best example. And here's why. Does Africa has the power to choose its own trading partners? Without any external influence, like from global powers, for example.
Mm.
First of all, in the world of geopolitics, that's borderline impossible. There's always someone who will be trying to influence you in one way or another.
But in the most paradise-like setting, it's a yes.
In an ideal world, it's a yes.
It's a dangerous thing to say.
I know. It's a very, very, actually dumb thing to say. There is no ideal world. There's someone that will always try to influence you, not really by military intervention, but they will always try to butter you up with something transactional, which is basically what diplomacy is based on and business is based on. It's always about, I have what you need, you have what I need. How about we exchange? Now, the thing is, this is where, one lady who was being interviewed from Rome in Italy, pointed out that, I'm not sure if it was Fortasim or the gentleman that was talking from Kenya, pointed out that, about how we should actually kick up a notch our negotiation skills. Because, when colonialism used to storm in with guns, you didn't have a lot to say about that.
Mm.
But now when it comes to modern day diplomatic discussions, if you can't negotiate, that's on you.
Exactly.
If you cannot negotiate, that's on you. If you borrow money and then use it for your, for your personal gains instead of investing it and then causing basically, literal capital flight after the whole thing goes bust. Again, that's on you. So this is where, everything starts from policy. Yeah. And, one example that you can easily, even if you are not an economist, you can learn from China is how they started small, basically.
Mm.
Instead of just going straight to building aeroplanes, how about we start with screws and then we can work our way up?
Even Japan, Hamoud.
You can start with, chopsticks and then you can work your way up.
Even Japan had to internally sort itself out, because what they had in the 1800s, with that one particular emperor, the one that was sent to Europe as a teenage boy, to go and learn, from their universities at that stage. And he came back and he said, hey, listen, we need to modernize. That was all he said. We need to modernize.
Yeah.
And when he said that, literally the country split in two. You had traditionalists. These were the samurai class. And you had the guys that believed, yeah, we need to modernize.
Yeah.
Because we can't be running into a battlefield with sticks and some, okapis, trying to show, what's our level of dicing power. And I come, the guy is standing 100 meters away from you, telling you, hey, listen, I'll show you how literally to take care of, or I'll show you what target practice looks like from 100 meters away before you even reach
me. They're going Columbus and the Indians.
I mean, what was the setting, by the 1800s?
So I will not change because this is my tradition.
So. It's the whole message that The Last Samurai, the movie by Tom Cruise, is based on.
Yeah.
Because it gives like an insight into that setting. Obviously, they went through a civil war. And obviously, the modernists won because they had the backing of an emperor.
Yeah.
Meaning it was imperial, what they call it? Imperial decree that was setting, meaning national policy was setting the agenda. In the African context, Hamoud, for some reason, for example, the thing that... We've been appropriating once again. In the same vein, like the other coup that took place, not last week.
Oh, Guinea-Bissau.
Guinea-Bissau, the week before.
Yeah.
We are dealing with an issue here of, are we really serious with the well-being of our everyday citizens in every African country?
Yeah.
What I mean by that? Well, has anyone ever come to you as a voter, as a business person, and say, hey, listen, what do you need that needs to be improved in this community that you live in? Basic question. Affordability studies, questions of understanding, what needs to be really done on the ground, and actually transmitting that information back to the central developing powers in the central government. Done. Instead of going and asking for money.
Look, all I can say it is the fact that we are having this whole, you know, very nice discussion about us processing our resources, which we don't even extract. Okay, I don't see how that's going to work, but, well, I'm here for it. As long as I have this mic, speaking of which, 7 minutes into business and economic segment time. So that brings us to the end of Home Run for today, until Monday for Home Run and Sunday for my DJ and humor and Sunday for you too.
Yeah, Sunday early morning, guys. We'll be back on my Sunday morning take. Obviously, you can catch me between 5 and 7. Helmut will be between
11 and 1.
11 and 1.
Yeah, you know, I have to, you know, 5 and 7, I'm snoring. But ladies out there, I don't snore. I'm quite simple. You all have a good weekend now.